Like someone's trying to destroy England. It's literally like they've got a concerted effort to destroy England, and they're getting away with it.
Yeah, and what happens over there?
It's really crazy. It's really crazy to watch, because the mass immigration's not an accident. It's on. If I was going to destroy a country, I would do it exactly the way they're doing it.
There's Keir Starmer, head of the UK, whenever he goes out in public. And that was Joe Rogan stating the obvious, that this is an attack, that mass immigration is an attack. Which is one of the interesting things about the rape gang inquiry report that we'll be covering this hour with Frank Wright, is that it routinely claims that the UK government is failing in its mission, which obviously they're the ones with the responsibility to protect the English people. In that regard, they are failing, you could say that. But their purpose is the destruction of the English people. You know, it's like, it's like if, you know, I put on a plumber's uniform and knock on your door and say, hey, I'm here from the city. There's a big leak we got to fix. I need access to your house. And then once I'm inside your house, I pull out a gun and put it to your head and rob you. And then afterwards, you're like, he didn't even fix the leak. What the heck? The guy didn't even fix it. It's like he was never going to – he never wanted to fix it. I was never going to fix a leak. That was a trick. That was a lie. That was the position I assumed to get access to you so I could abuse you. Right? Do you get it? The UK government is designed to do this. Its purpose has been to destroy the English people since 1948 and the British Nationality Act that opened up for mass immigration, followed by Tony Blair, Larry Ellison's understudy in 1997, really getting the mass immigration engine roaring. It's not that they don't care. It's not that they're failing to protect the people of the UK. They are a hostile occupying force that is trying to destroy the people of the UK in such a way that it can happen without causing an uprising. They don't want to outwardly attack the people of the UK, because then you might get backlash. You want to subtly, carefully, and over decades diminish and ultimately destroy the people of the UK without them ever waking up to the reality of what's happening and actually fighting back. And that's actually going to be a key part of the rape gang inquiry that I haven't seen anybody else cover. A lot of people are pointing to sort of the most egregious and horrifying examples of abuse from this, and they are beyond imagination. They are truly horrifying beyond comprehension. But even more important to that, to me, are things like the fact that every single instance in which the rape gangs were stopped at any point, it's because armed men showed up to stop them. Regular dudes, the uncles of the victims, showed up, and then it stopped. That's the only thing they fear. Let's go now to clip number 25. This is a caller to a British radio station or a TV station earlier today.
They're not listening. The political class are not listening. These people who are coming over here illegally, they're rapists, terrorists. They're coming over here. It's literally like putting a wolf in a sheep field. You are giving them a target-rich environment. You haven't vetted them. You've done nothing. All you've done is dump them in a place where they can wreak havoc. Where they come from, guess what? There's no law. If they can do literally whatever they like, they come over here. There's lawyers, of course, taxpayer-funded. They get a nice cushy home, running water, Sky TV, gym memberships, bus passes. They can literally go where they want and create havoc. And when they do, the people that foisted them upon us, guess what? They say, don't get upset. Don't do anything. Don't go out and cause unrest. Well, tell you what, mate, stop reaping, then you might not have to sow it, because this country is absolutely on the edge. They cannot take much more of people getting stabbed, raped, blown up, you name it. You foisted it upon us for the last 25, 30 years, ever since Blair said, I'm going to rub your noses in it. Well, guess what? What goes round comes round. And I think the political class have got a very, very, very big smack on the nose coming.
Well, they better. They better, because what this rape gang inquiry report reveals is the wholesale corruption of the entire British establishment. It all needs to burn, in my opinion. And these people need to pay the ultimate price. We'll be back on the other side to discuss how that'll happen.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to AlexJonesApp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
Alex Jones Show, because there is a war on for your mind.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today, talking about the Rape Gang Inquiry Report published days ago by Rupert Lowe and the Restore Party. I believe at least they were the biggest proponents and pushers of this. And it is just as horrifying as you can probably more horrifying than you can possibly imagine. And this should represent a watershed moment in the UK as the true scale and scope of what has occurred comes to light. This cannot pass without justice being achieved. And I want to try to figure out how we achieve that justice, if that's even possible, how we got to this point. And I'm very happy to have Frank Wright here to discuss this with me. You can follow him on X at Frank Wrighter. That's W-R-I-G-H-T-E-R. And frankwriter.com. Frank, thank you so much for coming on today. I assume that you have had a chance to look through the Rape Gang Inquiry Report. What are your initial thoughts, your first blush at reading the compendium of horrors that has been published?
I've never read anything more harrowing in my life, and it honestly defies description. I think it's, as Mr. Downs has said, it is your patriotic duty to read this report, because it reveals a crime on a scale and a timescale so vast that it really has no name. Even if you can imagine for a second that we've seen piecemeal reports of this going on for decades, but at no time has there been an effort to bring together the testimony of the victims, and clear evidence that this could not have taken place except permissioned by successive governments and indeed the state. This is a damning document, which it obviously concludes with a demand for the maximum justice.
And what that would even look like is hard to say. But, the important thing I think to understand is that this wasn't a fluke. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't the UK government trying their best and failing. You have examples like Keir Starmer in this is accused of basically presiding over 13,000 instances of childhood rape where he gave a warning letter and basically allowed the perpetrators to go free. Now he's been rewarded with becoming the prime minister. I mean, that's not an accident. He, of course, also was involved in the cover up with Jimmy Savile. I mean, this is an issue with the UK establishment that goes far beyond just incompetence. This is a deliberate structure that has been created after World War II, sort of starting with the British Nationality Act, as denoted here. And just to read some of the brief introduction of this, just giving people an idea of what we're dealing with. Police forces ignored repeated reports, criminalized victims instead of perpetrators, destroyed evidence, and allowed known rapists to walk free on bail. Social care services undermined protective parents, placed children in trafficking hubs inside children's homes, like the orphanages were actually operating like brothels, which is absolutely horrifying. But like you said, we've known this. You know, there's a report in 2014 that this was the case in a place like Rotherham. But there's something different about hearing these horrors one after another after another. The Rape Gang Inquiry Report is basically there's a name and then it's what's happened to that person over their life. And it's just one after another after another. Sometimes it's the victim. Sometimes it's a parent of the victim. trying desperately to get the British government to do something about what's going on to their children. And instead, they're the ones who are demonized. They're the ones who are criminalized. And some of the quotes out of this, where a social service worker tells a parent who's knows that their child is being trafficked, and they say, well, this is just the blessings of diversity. You should be happy that they're being introduced to another culture. I mean, it's beyond description. I kind of don't even know where to begin with this. How do you think it got this bad? Like, how far back do we need to go to really find the seed of this poison fruit?
Well, it was Rupert Lowe MP who decided to create this inquiry. And the reason why he had to do this, and it was led in chief by Sammy Woodhouse, who is described as a survivor activist, so a former victim of what has been described over 10 years ago as the industrial scale rape of British children. The reason why it was necessary for Rupert Lowe and Restore to put this inquiry together is obviously because the British establishment refuses to even look at the issue in any serious manner. If you look at what has happened, if you look at the report, it says the first instance of what could be creditably described as a rape gang of foreign origin was first reported in 1955. The rape gang inquiry then goes on to say that the problem at scale was enormously magnified following the pro-immigration policies of Tony Blair's 1997 government. And I would like to remind you that between 1997 and 2024, according to the British government's own statistics, a minimum of 18.5 million people came to the United Kingdom. That's only the ones they counted. So these migrationist policies have been undertaken deliberately and against the will of every elected government since 1997, which were all elected on promises to either limit or reverse mass migration. So it is important to note that the environment which has permissioned these crimes and indeed prohibited their mention from accusations of racism has been going on for decades, and that's successive governments and indeed organs of the British state, including the judiciary, the police, the NGOs, schools, care homes, social services, and so on. There have been repeated attempts throughout this timescale by individuals to alert the public and the state to the problem. For example, the Labour MP Sarah Champion said in 2015 that there could have been up to a million victims, child victims, of, as she said, the industrial-scale rape of our children. The Labour MP Anne Cryer, who is the MP for Keighley, if I recall correctly, also pointed out that rape gangs of predominantly Pakistani origin were conducting this terrible trade in the most innocent of our human lives openly and for years and tried to get something done. If you go back even further, you can see people like Nick Griffin were actually prosecuted for suggesting this was taking place. And the reason why these people are silenced, demonized, and prosecuted is because it is in fact true. And it has been true for decades. And this is the reason why you have to see an independent inquiry set up by Rupert Lowe, largely funded by Restore supporters as well, with some cooperation from some sitting MPs, but has been almost uniformly ignored by the establishment press and media. And that is because this report clearly demonstrates that these crimes on this scale could not have taken place, and they continue to take place. They could not have happened without the collusion, knowledge, and indeed permission of the authorities that are supposed to be here to protect the British people from precisely these crimes. It is an indictment of the rotten state of Britain.
It is, absolutely. And just give people an idea who haven't read this. When you read it, you get this sense, you get this understanding that this is like an economy. There are millions of people engaged in this. There is absolutely no way that this could have occurred without the knowledge and active participation of the people in power, whether it's the people running the care homes who basically treated the little girls like prostitutes, or the cops who often, when called to a situation, would look at a 12-year-old girl and say, well, she's just a prostitute, which it like blows my mind. It's like, what does that even mean? A 12-year-old girl, oh, we're not going to do anything because she's a prostitute? Like, it's stuff like that, that you go, okay, you have to find out who made that policy, because it's not a coincidence that in every single case all over the country that's the response from the police. That's not a coincidence, I don't think. I think they were trained to think that. I mean, training had to occur to have all of these people respond in exactly the same way, right? Like, we have to trace this back not just to bad apples taking advantage of the power that they were in, but like, why were they trained to think of it this way? Who instructed the police that here's the people that we actually pursue justice and here's the people that we write off and ignore? I mean, this is beyond systemic, and it has created an economy where entire populations in the UK seem to do this as their job. They come, they kidnap white girls, and then that is their source of income. Then they, you know, lend them out for a couple pounds a night. You get 15, 20 men. That's the way they make a living. Maybe they buy drugs and are trading drugs off of that. I mean, it is a criminal enterprise that has been manufactured by the British establishment. It's, again, it's hard to even put into words how this has occurred and how wide scale this has been. What could you possibly do to rein this back in rather than, you know, like overthrow the entire government? Because reading this inquiry report, seems like the entire government top to bottom was in on it. What do y'all do at this point?
Well, the inquiry, I think, quite reasonably concludes with a statement saying that this is the first phase. The first phase is basically naming the scale of the problem, listening to the voices of the victims, showing how this could have happened, and it could have only happened if not the participation, then the permission of the relevant authorities in the state. And it says that we must seek the maximum justice, not just for the perpetrators, but also for the officials whose action or inaction permitted this to continue over decades. And I would stress once again, it is continuing. And the reason why this inquiry has happened and the reason why it is now, well, it's extremely well researched, why it is a reliable account and just the beginning, if you like, of a long overdue procedure towards justice, towards the rebalancing of the rottenness of our state, some justice for the victims and the halting of the organized rape of our children, which is what this is. The reason this is happening is because people have come together to try and right a profound wrong done against our people and the most innocent of them. The reason why I'm speaking to you today in this situation is, again, thanks to the selfless dedication of other people than myself to try and get this message out to the widest possible audience. It's thanks to Herman of Vox Populi Media that I've got a broadcast signal to speak to you. Why is he doing this? Why has he gone out of his way to do this? Why have people given their money to the inquiry to make sure that it was written at all? Why have people offered their time? Why have some of the victims gone through the intense trauma of reliving some of the most horrendous things I've ever had to read? That's because if we do not bring these crimes to the widest possible audience, then the culture of silence, which has been created by the Liberal state around these crimes, will continue, and those crimes themselves will carry on. If you look at how these things took place and how they were permissioned, you will see that time and again, parents who complained about their children being raped were not only intimidated, but sometimes even arrested by the police. Children in so-called care homes were often offered to their rapists. Children who had been raped were given back to the situation in which they had been raped, in some cases collected by them. There was no attempt whatsoever to protect them. In some cases, the police described them as kind of sexually available or dirty little slags. These are children, and slag is a British slang term for someone who is sexually promiscuous without discrimination. This is how children were described. Now, when you understand that the authorities who are supposed to protect you, prosecute the law, take your allegations seriously, actually helped your rapist rape you again, you realize how deep the rot goes. And so how can this have happened? There are numerous cases, too many to call to memory, where you find out that certain local authorities or police forces or media figures were aware of the problem in one town or other. Yet they refused to publicize it because they said it would be inflammatory. It would create racial tension. It would fuel the so-called far right. It would fuel accusations of racism. And so the primary virtue of the system which has governed us since the post-war consensus is not to be racist. And if that's the only cardinal sin in this system, then you can see the degree, the grave moral evil, the horror that that permits, that it is frankly preferable that our children are raped on an industrial scale by largely immigrant gangs than it is to protect them. And the report says that a Muslim scholar says the rape gangs were of around 95% Pakistani Muslims. And that's from a Pakistani Muslim scholar. It's not from someone who could be described as being outside of the community. In addition, the report says that at least 250,000 of our children have been raped and even trafficked abroad and continue in captivity after this. And I would remind you that the inquiry was written with the advice of lawyers, and it was edited by people like Charlie Downs, Harrison Pitt, and George Firm, who have obviously helped to produce the document. But this is not a speculative piece of, if you like, polemical literature. This is an account that has been legally attested to and contains testimony from the victims of this system going back many years. And it includes, again, horrendous stories such as so-called caregivers delivering victims back to their rapists. It's frankly astonishing. And when you find out, as you do time and again, that it was impossible to speak about this without risking the ruin of your career, risking being vilified, and even if you did bring the authorities' attention to these matters, nothing ever happened. Bear in mind that this has been public knowledge for decades. Repeatedly, individuals have tried to get something done about it, and that's why we're in this position today, where Rupert Lowe is compelled to basically fund and produce this inquiry because no one in the state wants to do it, and that's the reason why the mainstream media is completely ignoring it, because it is an indictment of them. Because the silence of the media, the police, the judiciary, the organs of the state, the NGOs, the civil servants, the so-called carers, they are equally culpable in this in many ways. And if that is a very serious charge to make, but it is the only explanation that satisfies the facts. It is the only answer to the obvious question, how could this have gone on for so long? And that's why, at the end of the inquiry, they call for justice not just against the perpetrators, but also for the officials whose action or inaction created the environment in which these horrible crimes, the worst crimes against our people in history, have not only been made possible, but they've become a routine fact of life across the British Isles.
Absolutely. And just to back up what you're saying, from the inquiry, this was about a woman named Fiona, or at least that's the name that she was given here. Care staff negligence was extreme. Abusers would sit in cars outside waiting for the girls, openly converse with the staff, and even phone the home to inquire about the girls. Fiona believes the staff were aware of what was happening, but felt powerless to stop it rather than being actively complicit. Nevertheless, the children's home received £5,000 per week to care for her and failed miserably. Fiona suspects the management avoided proper investigation for fear of being labeled racist. Now, I'm sorry, to me, that's not sufficient. Obviously, nobody wants to be called racist, but I think it has to be understood that this was a top-down program that I believe, you know, in the inquiry, they note that, you know, the British Nationality Act of 1948 was sort of the first stepping stone on the path towards, you know, Tony Blair's 1997 full scale industrialization and, you know, giant operation to force mass immigration on everybody. This is sort of part and parcel to the New World Order that was created after World War II, where this idea of multicultural pluralism was the keystone. And it's always been a lie. It's always been an illusion. It has never actually existed. The violence, the chaos, the conflict has simply been hidden from the public. But there's never been an instance or a time period in which there was a thriving multicultural community. It has always been a disaster, a tragedy of human suffering as a consequence of this invasion. It's just been covered up ubiquitously and absolutely everywhere and constantly. It is crushed. And the point you make, I mean, again, we could go through point by point, but these girls would go to the police with the evidence of the rapes, you know, on their bodies, and the police would throw them in prison or criticize them or say, okay, we're going to handle it and then just do nothing. I mean, how many times does that have to happen before the you know, learned helplessness is adopted and little girls go, there's nobody that's going to help me. I better just give in. I mean, this whole thing has been a top-down program. Training has gone in to convince people to allow this to happen. Or, you know, the other thing I'd like to see is what were the races of the people involved? It actually makes a lot more sense if, well, there's a jobs program to give, you know, the wives of the rapists jobs in the care homes. I mean, it is a giant program. It's not. So, I mean, what do you think about that? Because to me, again, that, you know, the idea of like, well, they just didn't want to be called racist. I'm struggling for that to be sufficient to explain what's going on here. Do you understand what I mean?
Well, yes. I mean, look, I've spoken to the idea before that everything, every evil that's committed against us in the internationalist, liberal, or what you might call the global system, the globalist system, is also an industry. And the fact that you know that this is an industry and that these, that there are basically partnered NGOs, and then there are affiliate programs that effectively monetize and perpetuate this horrendous evil. This is the same in every other dimension. Like, you know, mass migration isn't a human rights issue. It's an industry. There, people are paid, partnered with criminal gangs to be trafficked here for profit. If you look at the transgender craze, that's not a civil rights issue. That's also an industry that not only permissions but monetizes the mutilation and sterilization of children, which disfigures people. And obviously, this is dreadful. These things are also businesses. That's a significant point. But the point about ideology that I would make is that when you have an ideology, when you get rid of Christianity, replace it with the worship of liberal state religion, for example, which is what you get. You don't get the absence of religious belief. You get its transference into political ideals. And one of the totems of the liberal state religion is racism. If you think about the Manchester Arena bombing, men went into a concert in Manchester, were suspiciously dressed, sweating, looking dangerous, of Muslim appearance. He was a Muslim, had a backpack on. When the security guard was interviewed after that atrocity, he said he suspected this man because he was acting suspiciously. He looked like he was carrying a bomb. I think I would stop him, but he didn't. And he didn't stop him because he said, I was afraid of being accused of being a racist for racially profiling him. Had that security guard acted on his training and instincts, then all those people wouldn't be dead and injured. This is what this voodoo curse does. It literally endangers your life. It can literally end your life. It means the people who are there to protect you don't discharge your duty, and it means the people who are there who want to harm you can do so with a free hand. Now, speaking about harm and danger, you just put a headline out there saying from the independent newspaper in Britain, saying that Rupert Lowe is the most dangerous man you've never heard of. I would ask to explain this, because whenever these charges are made, let's not just dismiss them as like the poisonous self-defense of a rotten system, which is what they also are, but let's take them seriously for a second. To whom is Rupert Lowe a danger? Is Rupert a danger to my children, to ours and to yours? Is he a danger to the victims of an industrial-scale rape of Britain that's been taking place for decades with the permission of the authorities? No. He's a danger to the corrupt establishment whose policies created this environment and whose officials permitted it to take place, because the cardinal sin of racism meant we could never mention the most horrendous crime against our people in our history, which is what it is. So that's what Rupert Lowe is a danger to. He's a danger to the system of politics and economy that monetizes the misery and indeed the destruction of your life and its value, of your people, of your religion, your nation, your civilization entirely, and they call you evil if you try to stop this. Now, what the point of this inquiry is not simply to list this for the purpose of political capital or attention grabbing, as some of these sniping individuals have said in the press. This is justice. We are talking about a demand for justice. Finally, we must have justice. This is the first phase. The next phase is, of course, talking about how you implement that meaningful justice to bring the perpetrators to justice, but also the officials who committed these actions and whose policies led to them becoming normalized.
Absolutely. Up to and including the current PM, Keir Starmer, who was involved in this from the beginning. We'll be right back with Frank Wright. Stay with us.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its businesses?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there in the way of it. If you look at the number of countries that have had runaway inflation since World War II, you know, in my lifetime, it's very large. Once you create that, it becomes a different world. And of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like six or seven times. I mean, it's just amazing what people do. Not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So This is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything. And on the
banking
system.
And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed. So here's Prince Charles, the king, announcing the digital chains, the mark of the beast system, and it dovetails with Tony Blair, who's globally, through the UN and Bill Gates, standardized the world ID that the UK, under orders of the king, I thought he's just ceremonial, no, he could dissolve parliament anytime he wants, is now going into place. This all ties into everything. We'll talk to top economist and great patriot, Dr. Kirk Kelly, in a moment about it, but here's the clips.
My ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services.
Tell us a bit about what it means for what government should do in terms of its digital infrastructure, digital ID, data centers, and so on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform.
What they do is Oracle make big donations to Tony Blair's Institute, and Tony Blair's Institute advocates for further advantages for Oracle and Oracle-affiliated entities. Listen, the centralization of data and the centralization of power is part of a dark and nefarious agenda.
People are really crazy if they don't call you. You're on record the biggest company because you have the best ratings, the best gold and silver prices. It is the smart move. Get a free consultation. They can roll over financial instruments.
This should be a happy time, right? So don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. There is a path to safety here financially, and that's what tangible assets do. This is what
God
the numbers
always
are
gives
telling
his
us.
People a way out, but the people perish always. For lack of knowledge.
Always. He always does. He's never going to say something, even if it's the mark of the beast. When he talks about it in Revelation, he's not going to say something unless we have a choice to either accept or reject, because he didn't create robots.
KEPM.com/gold. Sign up for the email there to get a free consultation. We'll call you right back. Or you can call the number 720-605-3000. The smartest investment you could have made in the last 3 years. I'm telling you right now, this is the place to go. 720-605-3000.
Program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. You can find us at alexjoneslive.com. You can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We have some fantastic new products there, such as the new premium nylon tactical belt. It's available from thealexjonesstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with smooth automatic ratchet buckle, no holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. Very nice, fancy belts. They have cool little designs on them, the Cross Edition, the 1776 Edition, and the Alex Jones Signature. You can get them each for under $40, or for a limited time, you can get all three bundled together for just $99. They are fantastic belts, extremely strong tactical belts for the person in your family that is into that type of stuff. If they've got the knife, if they've got the wallet, complete the set with the belt. But of course, it keeps us on the air. It keeps us talking about this stuff, such as the rape gang inquiry that my guest Frank Wright is here to comment on, because I'm shocked by this. Apparently, this is being basically totally unremarked in the UK media, which is kind of shocking to me, because this being Rupert Lowe, member of parliament, and I mean, this should, the way that the inquiry has been carried out, this should sort of demand coverage from the media, but they're totally ignoring it because they have no positive way to spin it. So they're going to be silent on it. We're not. We're going to continue to talk about it, just like we're going to talk about all of this stuff and have talked about this stuff for decades. it's not just about, you know, going to the store to make us rich. We're not getting rich, folks. We're doing everything we can to keep our heads above water and try desperately to fight back against this monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that is dominating every European nation and America all at once. We are the bulwark fighting back against it, using the information that they're trying to conceal from you, exposing it in a desperate attempt to invoke action to get justice and set ourselves back on the right track. Because being on the wrong track, like, again, there aren't even words to describe what has gone on here. So please support us in this mission. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. We have fantastic products there. It's a win-win really for everybody. And it allows us to stay on the air, to have these great guests, to have these conversations that are so necessary and not being had by anybody else with this level of production and, you know, ability to get the message out to people that aren't, you know, actively searching for it. And that's the crazy thing. My guest is Frank Wright. You can find him on X at Frank Wrighter, frankwriter.com. He's a contributor to LifeSite News, and his work focuses mostly on defense of life, family, and faith, exposing the powerful forces of cultural decay and globalism that threaten these foundational pillars. And again, I don't have the words, Frank, to describe what is exposed in this inquiry. And the question is, how did it get here? How did this get established like this, without anybody really, you know, recognizing or standing up against it to any sufficient degree to even slow it down? And there are instances in here that show just the brazenness with which these rape gangs operated. And again, I don't even like we're on the radio. We probably have families listening. I don't even want to get into some of the details, but they're necessary to understand the real scope of what happened here. And the reason they're necessary is because there are instances with like a young girl, pre-teen, really like 12, 13 years old, who has a bottle broken inside of her and then has to take herself to the emergency room, and the hospital simply patch her up and send her right back out. And the thing that sticks out to me is that the migrant knows he's not concerned. He's not the one taking her to the hospital and going, oh, geez, I might get caught. He knows he can operate with impunity. He knows the police are on his side. He knows the hospital is not going to make inquiries. They understand that they're protected and they act in accordance with that. And they're sending messages. They're using their real names. They have no fear whatsoever. They understand the situation. The police understand the situation. It's the regular British people that seem to be living in this delusion that crime is going to be punished and that the police are working for them. The migrants know fully well what they can get away with, and they do. And it's a job for them. And it's every day they're having these quote unquote parties where they're renting these girls out or picking them up from the care homes. That's what stood out to me, was the shocking confidence they had in carrying out these crimes. They knew that they would get away with anything. And that to me, I think, is, you know, tells you a lot about what's actually going on here. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I would encourage you to read the Rape Gang Inquiry yourself. I cannot do justice to the harrowing nature and scale of the problem. You must read it. It's unparalleled in anything I've ever read in my entire life. And to be honest, it takes a maximum discipline to speak to it without being overwhelmed with emotion.
Yeah.
It's simply atrocious. It has to be read to be believed, and it's true. Now, if you read the foreword, what Rupert Lowe MP said, he said, Britain doesn't have a racism problem, it has an immigration problem. If you understand what he's saying there, if you just really examine that remark, it does explain much of why this has gone on, where its causes lie, and how the entire political system, including the media, politicians, and so on, the state, and its apparatchiks, if you like, have permissioned this. This speaks to the root of the problem. You cannot solve problems unless you look at their causes. This is not just a case of describing the effects. Immigration is the cause, and that in turn is caused by a particular political economy, an economic and political view that we now know, if you like, is the international liberal system. And that, as you've said, has actually monetized horrendous crimes against us like this one, and indeed all the other insane policies which are destroying our civilization. Why does this matter? This matters because this reveals why this cannot be discussed honestly or addressed or stopped by the current political dispensation or its captive media.
Because to challenge the basic principle that mass migration is a good thing and is making the world better is to collapse the entire political and economic argument under which we are currently ruled. It shows you, really, that we really are ruled by a system that can be correctly described as the politics of national suicide. It's not just destroying our people and replacing them. It's actually destroying the meaning and value of our lives and in corrupting the meaning of words like justice, safety, care, law, and order. It's destroying everything within our spirit, our vocabulary of experience, and outside of us in all our institutions. They're all corrupted. It is extremely damning. In that one sentence, Britain doesn't have a racism problem. It has an immigration problem. That problem hasn't arisen out of nothing. That is the product of policies. And the dangerous thing for the establishment and its media to recognise is that the British people are realising that what has been done by policy can be undone by policy. That is why Rupert Lowe is described as a dangerous man. He's not dangerous to we British. He's the greatest champion we've seen arise in our lifetime to defend us from a system that seems hell-bent on destroying us all and everything that we hold dear. He's dangerous to that. And why is he dangerous? Because the crimes that have been monetized and created by policy against us are so vast that ordinary British people are realizing that something has to change. If we don't get rid of this system, ultimately it's going to get rid of us. It's not people like people who are described as conspiracy theorists, extremists, or, you know, the slurs that are attached to people like myself. It's not people like us who are really making this case. It's reality. And the reality is that the British people, a lot of them are fully aware that this has been going on. And it's been going on for so long, pardon me, and it's been going on with the obvious collusion of so many people in authority who should have protected us and protected our children, that the British people have largely given up hope that any justice can ever be seen. And Rupert Lowe has given us that hope back, and it is a realistic and practical hope. It is a rational hope, but it's a necessary hope. If we are to have a nation worth the name, if we are to have a future for our children worth the name, then we must have justice. And I would like to give a practical example of that. If you look at, a picture of St. Michael, you can see that in one hand he holds the scales of justice. And those scales are imbalanced. They're like this. And in the other hand, what does he hold? He holds a sword. And that is commonly understood as the sword of truth. And the purpose of restorative justice is not to see the scales pushed in the other direction in an insane manner. It is to balance them. It's to equalize them. And according to the image of St. Michael, the way to do this is with the sword of truth. The rape gang inquiry is a sword of truth to cut through the culture of silence, to cut through the political and economic establishment that not only creates the conditions for these vast crimes, but actually turns them into micro-industries and gives people positions of privilege and power to protect them and perpetuate them. This is a serious injustice. This speaks to the profound corruption of the organs of our state. This is what it means to restore Britain. It means to restore meaning to the word justice, to dignity to the lives of the victims and those future victims who will be victimized if we do not correct this serious imbalance, which has, frankly, corrupted our institutions to the point where, again, the mass rape of our children has become normalized. So this is the reason why Mr. Lowe is described as a danger. He's a danger to a wicked system. And the danger is, and that danger is present now, is that the British people have not just awoken to the depth of that corruption and evil in their politics and economics, but they've also awoken to the fact that in Restore Britain, led by Rupert Lowe, they have a serious, practical, and realistic hope of a political solution to the state of national emergency into which these political insanities and evils have delivered us all.
How do you make that case to the wider British public? Is the wider British public aware of this? Are they talking about this? Is this being discussed on mainstream media there? Do people even know about this? Because, you know, in the last week, I've been off, so I haven't been able to cover it, but there's been like five instances of there was the 5-year-old kid being arrested while his father was, you know, handcuffed and pepper sprayed. There was the young man whose head was slammed into a metal bar. I mean, it seems like any attempt by the British people to have any say in their governance, to speak up for themselves, is crushed with the most brutal repressive tactics I've ever seen. I mean, makes Nazi Germany look like a cakewalk. I mean, they're literally killing people who are simply protesting, or they're allowing gangs of migrants to wander around with weapons, targeting British people and doing nothing about it. I mean, it's so egregious what's going on here. Sell me the political solution, because I got to admit, at this point, seeing Keir Starmer go from letting off 13,000 perpetrators to becoming prime minister, it's like, how do you do this without a wholesale, total, complete, like, maybe America needs to, you know, give UK the Iraq treatment or something, go deliver democracy. It's like, that's where my brain goes because of the ubiquity of this corruption. What is there a political solution? You got to sell me on that, because at this point, it's like, I'm having trouble seeing it, frankly.
Yes, there is. Well, you can see that, for example, the absence of this issue from the mainstream media is no accident. That doesn't mean to say the British people don't know about this enormous scandal and crime committed against their children. From memory, and I hope not to have produced the report, the rape gang scandal took place in over 140 towns and cities across England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. This is not an isolated phenomenon. If you live in these communities, you know that it's been going on for decades. You're fully aware of it, and it is a damning indictment against the police and the government and all their organs and agencies and the NGOs affiliated with them. The British people are fully aware of this. They have had to endure it. Most people who live in these regions know someone who's been involved in it, as I do personally. It is no secret. But it was a collective idea that nothing will be done under a locked political system, a forced consensus in which there's no serious political alternative. There's no hope in any of the parties. There's no probity or integrity or will to investigate, because this continued of successive governments under the Labour, Liberals and Conservative parties as well. So, of course, this is the reason why you wonder why. How could Keir Starmer get what's called a dictatorial supermajority in the last general election? The left-leaning Institute for Public Policy Research published a paper called Half of Us, and it said that around half the British electorate simply did not vote in the last election. That's to say, the last election was fought between around 50% of the people who can vote, and does not include the number of people who are eligible to vote who didn't register. So only 50% of the registered voters voted. What does that mean? It means that half of us, at least half of us, don't vote at all, because there's nothing there to vote for, because you've completely lost any faith in the political system, its parties, its membership and its policies to do anything meaningful to help you in your life. Again, this is why Rupert Lowe's Restore is seen as such a danger, because what Restore are doing is you can see them consistently appealing, mobilising people, appealing to people who can see the sincerity and integrity of the party, that it's a genuine chance for a political solution to the national crisis. They want to save the nation. They're going to vote for Restore because they've nothing else to vote for. They say, I've never voted in my life. If you can cut through any party in the West, can cut through to the increasing near majority of people who are so disaffected by their corrupt, criminal, and indeed, shall we say, it's almost like you're ruled by a crime syndicate, the degree to which they've subtracted the value of your life over the last 30 years to a century. If you finally get an alternative to that and you see, yes, there is a political solution, it mobilizes people who've been so disaffected that they just don't vote at all. And that is an existential threat to the corrupt political cartel, if you like, that is managing us all into a series of international standardized decline. Because that's the whole idea. That's the globalist idea, if you like, in a nutshell, is to standardize the world underneath its own standards. So instead of nations, some kind of borderless international bazaar of bargain hunters. And that bargain includes the sexual bargain of your women and children. Because let's not forget that this completely amoral, corrupt, and indeed satanic system practically advertises our women and children, but to be sexually available by a constant stream of phone-available hyper-pornography. And so is it any wonder if you collapse the borders and let millions of people in from all over the world, if they've been watching graphic pornography featuring white women and children, they come to your country, what are they going to do? I mean, I've seen it described as a rape safari in Britain. And I thought that was excessive myself until you look at the figures. You look at how many children have been victimized by this. And again, Look at the enormous rocketing rapes of women from Sweden to Britain across the West, where you've seen these rape statistics skyrocket exponentially alongside migration figures. That's because it is universally degrading to everyone. It is impossible to defend the system in words of one syllable. It's impossible to defend the globalist or internationalist liberal political economy, honestly, in an honest argument. And so that's why they don't do that. And instead, if you point out the terrible effect that it's caused in our lives, it's replaced our lives with an atrocity exhibition of constantly horrendous effects, where you have to explain to your children sometimes what you've been watching. You've been watching one of our people being beheaded in the street by a man who shouldn't be here. You've been watching someone die in police handcuffs when they've complained of being mortally wounded. You're watching a report come out that is so unspeakable you can't even describe it to your children. These are factors of our everyday lives now. These aren't just news stories or sensationalist soundbites. This is the dire and obscene, degraded condition into which we've been delivered by this political system. So if you think it's extremist to say that this is as if you've been ruled by the enemies of our people and civilization, that they act like a crime syndicate, how else would you describe the effects of these policies over decades at scale? Look at the effects they've produced. If that's not a crime on a scale so vast that it's nameless, then nothing is. And that's the condition of humanity generally. We are all degraded by this, whether you agree with me politically or not. It's degrading all of our lives. And if we don't stop it soon, the horror will be simply so vast, it'll be impossible to contain, and we'll all be consumed in some blood tide of vengeance. And that is the primary duty of the state, is to prevent this kind of barbarism from consuming our civilization. That is the hope that's offered by Restore Britain. It is a credible, practical hope. There are serious policies that have been presented and been developing how we get from this rotten, corrupt state to the balance that is necessary to restore justice, order, and a life worth living for our people and a future for our children. It can happen. I believe it will happen because the awful reality created by this corrupt political establishment is simply unbearable. And the fact that there's now a realistic and honest solution to that with moderate, sensible policies that wants simply a high-trust society and, shall we say, the removal of the politics of insanity and national suicide and its replacement with decency and a meaningful justice. This is the argument that's being made. What kind of people describe that appeal as extremism? As I like to say to people, I remember Britain when it was a good, happy country to grow up in. That was the country I grew up in. I want that country back for my children. Is that such a terrible thing to say? And the rape gang inquiry shows how far we've come from those, if you like, fondly remembered days to the horrors that we inhabit now that have been normalized. And this is how we get back to having our dignity, to having our homeland again, and to having a future worth the name for our children. And if they vilify you for demanding that, consider how evil you must be. Consider how evil you must be to say, oh, look, I just want something good. Oh, well, you're a bad person. And that's basically what we're seeing now. How long can that system continue? That's plainly insane. Millions of ordinary people can see it. And as they continue to fight this line, that's what they're effectively doing. They're saying, no, we're going to make your life corrupted by evil and miserable. We're going to destroy it. And if you complain about it, we're going to lock you up. Well, they can't lock everyone up.
That's right. And so much effort has gone into and continues to go into stopping any backlash, political backlash, peaceful backlash, violent backlash, whatever it is. Without the intervention of the government, this really probably wouldn't even be an issue. And it was one of the things that I've found very interesting throughout the rape inquiry, the gang rape inquiry, is that you have example after example where the gangs are actually stopped, that, you know, a girl is protected. And it only ever happens in instances like this with a woman named Whitney. Whitney recalls that her brothers stopped, that the brothers that were abusing her, stopped contacting her after they arrived at her house to collect her and found all of her uncles sitting on the wall outside. After that incident, they never came back. She cannot remember exactly how or why her uncles were there, but she believed her mother had asked them to intervene. I mean, time and time again, you see nothing stops these people until they're afraid that the English Defense League is going to show up with baseball bats or her uncle is waiting there to confront the guy. You have to have a government intervene to stop regular people from fighting back. And that's, of course, what they're doing.
Yes.
With Rupert Lowe as well. They want to shut down the.
This
I mean,
is,
please.
This is the reason why Rupert Lowe has sensibly said we will put before the British people the question of reinstatement of the death penalty. If you look at the execution of the SFI Joseph de Maistre, he makes a very credible case to say that once you abolish meaningful penalties for people who commit the most heinous acts, you basically give them liberty to do so. The people who are going to do these things to you are not going to listen to reasoned arguments. But another thing that Restore is offering is the restoration of meaningful and appropriate justice to rebalance the heinous acts committed against the most innocent of our people. And so how terrible is it to just say, I'd like to live in a nation where my children are not raped with the permission of the state by people who should not be here? This is the first step towards that. Remember, this is phase one. And the next phases must be a pathway towards meaningful justice for the victims, the prosecution and punishment of the perpetrators, and the people that made this possible by policy and permission.
I pray that you're able to do it before they totally shut down, you know, your ability to even communicate. Obviously, now they're trying to implement digital ID, limit access to social media. Of course, Blue Sky is, you know, exempt from that. And of course, throughout the inquiry, there are these examples of, you know, WhatsApp groups or whatever else. These people are, you know, inviting their friends, sending child pornography to people. Somehow that's going to continue unabated. But certainly the backlash to that will be clamped down on, and anybody speaking out will be punished. So, I mean, really, it's like a race against time, whether Restore Britain can actually get elected and Rupert Lowe can actually set about achieving justice, or whether they're able to truly clamp down on communications and ability to actually be represented by somebody that values the British people and doesn't want them destroyed. Incredible stuff. I mean, it's just, please, I'm just speechless about this whole situation. Like, I've got nothing to add other than just like, you got to read the inquiry report. Final words, Frank Wright.
Yes, it is harrowing. I enjoin you to read it. You must read it. I think it's your duty to read it. But I think basically, if this causes you to despair, don't despair. Everything that the liberal system is doing now to try and retain its grip on power is actually an act of self-harm. Just think about the effect at scale on people who aren't yet fully aware of the crimes committed by the state against them. What the state is effectively doing now is saying, if you try to do good, you are bad. You are the worst possible people alive. If you try to protect our children and secure a meaningful future for them, you're terrible. If you want a homeland worth the name for your own people, where we've been here for centuries, thousands of years, then you're an extremist. What we're talking about here is that you are being demonized by the extremists in power. And every argument that they make to try and demonize people who just want good, just common sense. I don't want my children to be raped. I don't want people to be slaughtered in the street. This system cannot continue, and it won't. And I think we're going to win.
100%. You have the moral superiority. Wield it like a sword. We'll be right back.
It took them 2 years to do it. When Bigley came on as our sponsor, now the owner of the Auctions Network, and then the main backer, I said, I want gravity-fed filters. I sent them the test from previous sponsors, and I said, these guys fell off. Their quality wasn't as good. I got rid of them. This happens to these companies. There's only out of more than 50 gravity-fed companies, three or four that have the very best filters that cut everything out. They're stainless steel, and they start cutting the quality for whatever reason. I said, I want the highest-rated stainless steel. I want a clone of these products, but even better, and I want filters rated this high or higher. They went out, took them 2 years, they did it. This is something everybody needs, everybody wants. There's a giant market of folks that know how wonderful gravity-fed filters are and know what quality is. We have all the tests published on the site. It's the best. There are companies selling filters that the stainless steel isn't as nice, anywhere close, and the filters aren't even the highest rated. They're selling the damn things for $400. They're selling units similar to ours, aren't even as good, for $500 retail, discounting at $400. These babies are $300 and even lower for VIP members. There is very small markup. The markup is not even 100% in these, okay? And when you're VIP, it's even lower. That is the best deal. This is a home run. This is the best. This is going to help hire new crew on top of the crew, extra crew. It's going to help get new reporters and hosts and the new network getting completed with all the equipment stuff. I mean, this is a big investment here. We're rebuilding our operations. We can't do it without you. So your word of mouth for the show, alexjoneslive.com, getting the free app, sharing that with others where they can get it, alexjonesapp.com, following us on X at Real Alex Jones, following us on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. That's all critical in telling others to do that. Your word of mouth, your prayer is king, but getting these products is also critical. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.